He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Okay, good morning to our listeners for this week's show of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. I'd like to start with a discussion about headlight glare because I've been reading about it and prepping for this particular show. And there's a lot of discussion going around, well, through AAA members apparently, because that's where I've been reading this particular story about headlight glare, about the glare that it seems to have increased in recent years from headlights of oncoming cars at night. And I, for one, am one of the persons who is definitely complaining about that kind of thing because the headlights, well, they've gotten much better at showing the road ahead when you have them in the newer cars that are out there, are also causing a lot of distraction in my eyes at night and making it hard to see around oncoming cars and even trying to maintain my vision focused on the roadway. I thought many of the new cars had self-leveling headlights, which apparently is not the case. I am very aware of pickup trucks, especially when they're laden in their pickup beds with heavy items that cause the pickup to compress on its rear springs and therefore probably raising the level of the headlights, even when they're on low beams, to a degree that is almost like they are on high beams when they're actually on low beams. Often I find myself as a driver at night flashing at oncoming cars, but it's increasingly common to find out that those lights are already on low beam, even though I think they're on high beam. Yeah. Jay, I'd like you to chime in about this because I think it's very distracting.
It is. Yeah, I totally agree. And it is more of a problem with the newer headlights, I think, in a lot of cases. And I agree with you. I think there's not much, obviously, we can do about that, except when you are looking at the road is you know, train yourself not to stare at the lights themselves, but try to look at the side of the road, not to be blinded as much. And that's just a little tip. There's nothing much else you can do except have good lights yourself. I do have a pet peeve with all those light bars that we see increasingly on cars and oftentimes on pickup trucks and on certain police cars, not state police. Not Connecticut State Police, but I did notice I was followed a couple of weeks ago by a car that, and it seemed like high beams really right in my rear window, and turns out it was a police car from some local town here in southern Connecticut, but with a light bar on the front grill. Anyway, they are disturbing. Again, there's not much you can do. And if you flash your lights at them, they usually flash back even brighter. So we're just going to have to live with those.
The discussion in the AAA article that I have on my computer screen as we're doing the show is saying that there are baby steps being taken towards the smart headlight systems that are designed to maybe adjust their beams based on what is in their path and look less harsh to oncoming drivers. But as usual with the NHTSA, things take a long time to go from theory to actual decision-making and then implementation of the laws. It's not like they can say, okay, it's 2024, and we want this all fixed by 2025. It tends to be, well, we know it exists in 2024, and we're studying it, which means a year or more study, and we hope it'll be taken care of within the next, let's say, 5 years or longer. But I agree with you, Jay, and the listeners. I'm sure there are listeners that will agree with both of us that these light bars that are sold as accessory lighting systems and are being used a lot on SUVs, mainly Jeep-type Wranglers and pickup trucks by people who want to, I don't know what they're trying to do with them. They're trying to make daylight out of nighttime, I think. They are really distracting, even if they are aimed properly, which would be aimed lower than they might would lessen their effectiveness of lighting the road ahead. They are a nuisance in many cases. Some of them are mounted on the atop of the windshield or on the roof edge, not just in the grill in the front. But those bars are amazingly distractive, as effective as they might be for the users of them. I guess we can stop there.
Yes.
And other things, Jay, what did you have on your topics to go in before
we've been discussing off the air, you know, the future of certain car companies and
Fisker.
Some of the ones we don't know much about, and we discussed the case of BID or BYD, or which actually stands for Build Your Dream, a Chinese car company that was founded not too long ago, 1995, and they have become the world's biggest electric vehicle manufacturer. And not only of cars, which they make a lot of and sell a lot of, obviously, in China, but also their presence here in this country with a lot of electric buses being used as city buses in quite a few of our cities here in the U.S. So they are not new. They have a presence here in the U.S., and their models are coming to our shores in the foreseeable future, like it or not. They are also going upscale with two vehicles in particular, one sports car that is pretty darn good looking. It looks like a supercar. It is a supercar. And as somebody pointed out in the press, you know, unlike Tesla, it will hit the road pretty soon. Unlike Tesla, the Roadster that Tesla is promising us.
Is this an electric car, Jay?
It is. They are electric cars only.
Right.
And they also have a very nice SUV, again, upscale SUV, which will be coming this way probably in, next 2 to 5 years, is my guess. And I say that a guess. I mean, I'm sure we can find out more information. But, yes, they are coming. So that was one car company that I thought I didn't even know existed a few weeks ago. And then we talked about it. The other car companies that are spiking my interest are Rivian and Lucid. And I still am a little skeptical when it comes to Lucid. They only have, right now, only one model, the Lucid Air, which is a big luxury sedan. But I have seen quite a few of them. I mean, I came across a few of them over this weekend, around our neck of the woods. And the Lucid Air is known for having a top-of-the-line model that is, you know, faster.
Over $200,000, I believe.
Yeah, it's a $250,000 car. It is insanely fast. We're talking, 0 to 60 times in less than 2 seconds.
3 seconds.
Quarter miles in less than 10 seconds. Top speeds of close to 200 miles an hour.
And good range.
And the range of over 400 miles. So right. It's a pretty good all-around car. And on track, it's faster than most cars, most sports cars, faster than the Corvette, and pretty much not far behind the Porsche's fastest models.
Well,
so it's impressive.
If I may interrupt, Motor
yeah,
Trend
sure.
has got a very good user experience article about the pluses and the minus of their Lucid, which I believe they've had for over a year. And any listeners who want to who get Motor Trend magazine or go online and like to look about these test drives that Motor Trend has been doing on a lot of vehicles, will get a very good insight onto their opinion of the Lucid. Lucid is I've been very interested in the Lucid too. I'm never going to be able to afford one, nor am I going to want to own one. But the other Fisker is I'd like to bring up because Fisker has been not in the news the way Lucid and Rivian have been as far as the success factor that each is trying to improve on so that they stay alive in the car industry. Fisker also had some interesting models which have failed to make it to the market despite projections of 2023 and forward introductions supposed to be occurring. So anybody who wants to think about a Fisker, I do not know whether Fisker's got anything buyable on the market. Jay, you might know the answer, but...
No, I do not know. There are a few models out there. I'm not really aware.
They are close to bankruptcy, though, as far as the article I read recently was concerned, unless somebody comes to rescue them. And that's the question of all these upstart new makers of vehicles that are not common names to us and to the public, but who the public may bump into if they're looking for something different than the run-of-the-mill Fords, Stellantis, and GMC products and the run-of-the-mill European products.
Then there's Rivian, and Rivian is still only selling trucks and SUVs.
They're showing up, too, as you know, more and more. And everybody that I've talked to that has a Rivian has been... really loving their Rivians, whether it's been the pickup truck or the big, large SUV. And they've had very good ratings, as you know. And
yes,
anybody who studies these things probably know with all the tests that have been done with these vehicles. And now they're starting to test Rivians against the Hummers, the GM Hummer, and the Ford Lightning, and the other competing electric vehicles that match the models that Rivian puts out. And I think it's showing itself very well in all the tests and comparisons.
Yes, it has. BMW also has a big electric SUV, and there was a comparison test a few months ago in one of the big car mags, opposing the BMW and the Rivian, and both came out as being great vehicles. I think the Rivian had won that test, if I recall, but it was a close match.
Well, I know Motor Trend did a big test on Rivians. What do you do when you run out of battery juice in an electric vehicle? And it was quite a striking article. It makes you want to be sure that if anybody wants to own an electric vehicle, be it a Rivian, a Tesla, or anything else, it would be very wise that they never drain their battery to a dead-on stop before they have to charge it, because apparently charging dead electric car batteries can be from a complete failure to a very expensive solution. Jay, you may or may not know much about that, but the Rivian experience was where I got this opinion for that kind of comment.
So speaking of driving experiences,
yes.
This past week I've had the opportunity again to drive up and down I-95, and it is it's just nuts, right? I mean, the Northeast Corridor, so between Boston and Richmond, Virginia, is just...
crowded?
It's just madness. And this time around, I did it in a Mercedes Sprinter van.
Diesel?
No, it was a gas model, the base model. Wheelbase. And the base engine is a four-cylinder turbo engine, same as you can find in the Mercedes cars. And it is surprisingly quiet, and it has a 9-speed transmission that is one of the smoothest transmissions I've experienced in any vehicle. The seating position is great. You're sitting like in a car. The seats are extremely comfortable. The wheel is tilted like in the car. It's a small steering wheel. They're really, really, really nice to drive. And this was a rental vehicle, so it had been beaten up pretty seriously. Mileage was pretty good. You know, I think I got 18 miles to the gallon going one way and 20 coming back. You know, you get more of a tailwind coming up 95. But again, the traffic was absolutely insane. You cannot get on I-95 and go for in the Richmond, D.C. area more than, you know, 10, 20 miles, and then you have a 10 or 15-minute delay. So, you know, the ongoing consensus is that you should cross those areas at night, which I did not do. I thought a Saturday midday would be a fine time to do it. It was not.
Are there some, for drivers' interest, because a lot of the people in our listing region head south for wintertime and then they come back north in the springtime. Around the Washington area, are there separate alternative high-speed routes that you pay a toll on to get you around some of the parts of I-95 that you are saying are congested?
Yes, quite between
a bit?
Baltimore and Washington, D.C., there are sections of 95 and 495 where you can pay extra money and ride parallel to the you know, four lanes. You get an extra two lanes of express toll road. And it costs a pretty penny. I mean, you're talking...
But is it effective?
Oh, it is very effective. It's not always... Because those center lanes are going either one way or the other. So they're only running one way at certain times of day, and then the other way, you know,
the other times
based
of the
on
day.
Commuter traffic.
Are they like commuter lanes like we have around the Hartford area on 84? Or are they better
no, no, no.
than that?
They're
are
not
they divided
lanes.
From
they're,
the...
They're dedicated lanes, but they're going in one direction or another or the other.
So they have lights that tell you they're open or
lights
closed?
Lights and gates that tell you you can go in or not
right.
go in.
Okay.
And when you can go in, depending again on the time of day, you're paying, for some sections, you're paying $10, $12 to do just a few miles. But it's worth every penny. You can save a lot of time.
Okay, let me jump in with something about Tesla that is making the news waves. The news waves with the Cybertruck. And I sent it to you before the show, and it was labeled, the question was, are Tesla Cybertrucks rusting? And they're stainless steel bodies, and they're designed not to rust. And the abrupt response from people who know about it is that they are not rusting. It apparently is some kind of reaction to raindrops on stainless steel bodies, and somebody chimed in and said it also happened on another stainless steel car or some other stainless steel cars. And whatever this thing that's happening chemically on the surface of Cybertrucks that appear to make it look like there are specks of rust developing on the surface is simply something that can be removed with some kind of cleaner. And so we have, I don't know when we're going to see a Cybertruck in our broadcast area. I'm not sure they're delivering any in great numbers yet. Somebody will be bound to be having one. You and I are obviously, I'm certainly are, and I'm sure you are looking out to see when we first see one running around this northwest corner broadcast area. I think Motor Trend did a test on one, and they actually came away rather favorably impressed with it. It said it does accommodate pickup truck drivers or enthusiasts' needs as a pickup truck. The main thing that I picked up from the article I read on it was that the outward visibility from inside the truck is pretty miserable, and as such, it's probably due to that sloping back aerodynamic body style that the pickup truck is at. But I'm certainly looking to... I'm hoping I'm going to see one someday and be able to get hold of the owner and see what he or she thinks about these Cybertrucks, which are very interesting in their design, not something that's been attractive to me, and I'm not sure what you think, Jay. But apparently it's quite... useful as a pickup truck.
I'll take your word for it. I cannot can't get excited.
Whether it sells or not in the numbers that Tesla claims they had orders for, it remains to be seen as well once people start seeing them on the road.
I still think it's Tesla's first flop, but that's my prediction.
Okay, fine.
And if not, you know, hey, I've been wrong before. So speaking of, you know, I was talking about I-95, and the safety factors, and you know, we have a little segment about safety every week. It is I-95 is one of the deadliest roads, if not the deadliest road in the country, and the sections here in the Northeast are even deadlier than others. And it goes back to driving practices when you are on those highways. And I know a lot of people who are not used to driving on the highways. I-95 should definitely not be your first experience as a young driver. But you see crazy things. You see a lot of road rage. A lot of people driving way too fast, going from one lane to another. And I was thinking about you, Robin, is when I see all this driving, I'm wondering, maybe self-driving cars really would do the job better than we do in that sort of traffic.
Okay, let's let our listeners have a little debate with us between ourselves about that. How can you figure in the engineering way or the drivable way of self-driving cars that they could improve on the experience of driving on 95, which, as you say, is extremely dangerous at many times of the day?
I think the danger, a lot of the danger is related to driver's behavior.
Correct. Absolutely. And are they going to want to have a self-driving car to dampen their suggestive bad
road
driving behavior?
And bad decision-making?
Yeah. I don't know what the self-driving cars could do except clog the lanes, because they would be controlling their speeds electronically and not getting out of the way of these, well, let's call them slalom drivers, of which I experienced the other day on 684. And it was extraordinary what went through the two or three lanes of traffic by two cars that were, if they weren't racing each other, they were certainly competing for seeing how fast they could get through traffic that was, if not being congesting, close to being in a congesting state. And these drivers were just downright dangerous. And what really disturbs me, not that I want to see a lot of police enforcement on our roads, is the lack of state police at certain times of the day. I don't mind it if they think they don't need to be around on commuting hours, because you usually got three lanes of traffic pretty well tightly clogged on the road, so that you can't have a slalom driver passing by. But when the traffic is not in a commuting time frame period, and the roads are more open to driving over the speed limit, then these people who are just raging to get ahead of life are just roaring through traffic, as you have noted.
Yeah, they're commuters in a hurry to get back home.
And whether self-driving cars would solve the problem, would anybody who wants to drive like this own a self-driving car that would control their craziness? I don't know. What do you want to say to that?
I don't know. I think that the behavior we exhibit is, I think, the cause of a lot of the mishaps on the roads. I mean, I saw that on I-95. I think 684 is a milder version of the craziness you see on the New Jersey Turnpike, around Baltimore, around D.C. It's just there's a lot of road rage, and the result is you see crashes all the time, and people die.
Are you seeing enforcement agencies out there on these roads during those times, and do you see everyone that's on there has got
I'm
somebody
sure
pulled
are.
Over for
I mean,
the stupid
when you're driving,
stuff?
Obviously, like you said, if you have a massive traffic all driving at the same speed, and there are police cars in the mix, you don't necessarily see them. Although I did see, I was on the New Jersey Turnpike, and I saw a police car and people doing stupid things all around him, and the cop not doing anything about it. So, a lot of times they're just watching, and I guess they have to do that too. I think it's getting to be critical in a lot of areas, and we see that statistically. I don't have them right in front of me, but the last couple of years, speeds have been increasing, and there are more and more bad crashes on these highways.
Well, the speed limits aren't increasing, however, just as driving speeds are increasing.
Yeah. And cars get the speed
notably,
than they used to.
I figure that I can drive 8 miles, sometimes 10 miles an hour over the posted speed limit, which means you can go, you know, at 65 you can do 75 or 73 without worrying about enforcement. But generally, if people adhere to that kind of speeding limitation area, the roads seem to go, the driving road seems to be smoothly moving down the roads. Although, as we have noted on earlier shows, an extraordinary number of people in the left lane are going slower than a lot of people in the middle and or the right lanes of these roads, which is exactly the opposite of the way it should be happening.
Yep. I did notice in Virginia they just started implementing adaptive speed limits. So
really?
The speed limits change
with electronic signs that can do that,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
how about Europe? That's already there, right?
Say that again?
How about in Europe? That's already there,
yes.
Correct?
In Germany, they've had that for decades.
And I also wanted to back into the headlight situation. I thought years ago, manufacturers like Audi and probably BMW and Mercedes had adapted computerized headlight systems that would eliminate the problem that we opened the show with of a lot of glare, light scatter, whether it's glare or whatever else that's occurring on our roads with these LED headlight systems, of which you see many designs on different front ends of cars, from a row of maybe three or four LEDs in a slant in the headlight bezel, or two or whatever, and
so,
the light scatter that comes off some of these LED systems, which are supposed to be on low beam, not creating a glaring problem for oncoming traffic, are not doing that kind of job.
I guess we're circling back to our first topic.
That's right.
That may
I
be
did.
When
that's smooth,
I do.
Was,
I do know,
did
and
circle
I do
back
recall
to it.
A few years ago, certain manufacturers are not able to bring over to this country these adaptive light systems they have.
Exactly what I was bringing up.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll get them and things will be better. They're also very expensive, and you don't want to have a light bulb go out on one of those lights.
Well, we can talk about safety things and light bulbs, too. People should be checking whether both their headlights are working, and we're getting to the safety time of maybe the show. And you can't do that unless you have your headlights on and somebody else at the wheel pushing on the dimmer high beams lever and walking around to the back to see if your rear lights are all on or that. But there's a disturbing number, in my opinion, of single light cars, even with also no parking lights on below the headlights, so that you actually only see a car lit with one lamp. And I do not know whether the drivers just ignore the replacement because it could be costly to do. Some of the new cars, I understand, takes up to an hour to replace a headlight system. Subaru is one manufacturer that had a problem with their headlights that if you one of them went out, it was an hour and a half to get at the light because of the way they were packed into the front part of the car and change the bulb or change the whole light fixture. That's ridiculous.
ridiculous.
Gone are the days for some of these cars where you could just go to an auto parts store and
yes,
get the lamp and almost
the
do it yourself.
From the 80s.
So that means check your lights before you go driving, right, gentlemen?
That does.
All right.
That means
that also means
and that means it's time to go.